I'm going to begin with an introduction, which is going to be a general one, and we can discuss something of the more specifics of the biblical passages at a later stage. I think that when we begin the problem of thinking about suffering, we often begin it at a stage where the individual circumstance of suffering in many ways overshadows a more general thought of what suffering is in the total context of reality. So that we're faced with a friend who suffers, we're faced with a patient who is suffering, we're faced with a wife or a husband or a family member who suffers, and at that point in time, I would say that it is often difficult to look beyond the individual problem, to look backwards and to see what the nature of suffering is in the total context of reality. And that's how I'm going to begin. I would also say that it's my personal experience that suffering is so important that it is something that we should teach our children about from the very beginning of their understanding. My experience with patients and their relatives is that seldom is suffering discussed in a way that is able to cope with the reality when it occurs, such that the trauma, when you have a relative suffering and you're trying to work through abstract concepts often, becomes overwhelming. And so often Christians at that point in time find themselves on the verge of being unable to cope. And so I would say that it is so important that we should teach our children about this from the very beginning of time. This is against the humanistic culture, which hides both suffering and death in institutionalized medicine very often, so that people no longer die at home. And in fact, suffering appears to be taken away from the family and put into the hands of clinical team. And I think that the Christian aspect is somewhat against that. What I would say is that one must begin in approaching suffering by considering who the God is that we are thinking about and what kind of universe he has made. That there is no simple shortcut way of coping with suffering. Now, if we contrast the attitude that we might take with the current humanistic type attitude, then we see that there is a very great dip, and one which we have to, right at the beginning, realize and cope with. The problem of a non-Christian asking about suffering is often referred to the context of someone who is here by chance, whose bodily structure is the result of the conveyance of genetic material and the onslaught of a natural environment which is meant in some way to eventually improve the race. And the implications philosophically of that is that personality has no real place, because the universe of time and of chance and of molecular biology is one of things and not personality. And in that situation then, one views suffering as a chance occurrence which has happened to me and not you, for example, where I have a right to feel that it's unfortunate but nothing more. Because the probability is that in a universe with microbes and accidents and other adverse situations, that the only thing I can expect is to run into problems. And in a sense, it is philosophically quite absurd to argue from that base and complain against suffering. Because in a sense, if you are a true evolutionist, then in fact, if you have suffering, if your body is incomplete in its genetic makeup, you should be glad to be wiped out and so have that genetic structure removed, if you are truly altruistic. And it is no wonder in that situation that our patients have tremendous difficulty coping, because they're torn with their personal need to be able to live a life that is fruitful, to have love given to them, and to achieve something, and yet they find themselves without a basis of doing just that. And I think that this is something that we have to face right at the beginning and look at the difference in the world view that Christians have from that basis. And we have to do it, I think, wherever we can, in the coldness of not having the problem on our doorstep, the crisis, so that we plan that this should be so. And in fact, the realization that, for instance, suffering, an adverse financial experience can totally wipe you out in this world has led, I think, to a very fatalistic type of pessimism amongst many of the people that we face. And I thought that it might be interesting to just read back to Ecclesiastes, if you open your Bible, chapter 9, because I think it's very comforting to see, in fact, that this has already been realized so long ago. You'll remember that presumably it was Solomon who wrote this book, and Solomon did so from a choice of a humanistic worldview. Solomon deliberately chose to consider only those things which were under the sun. That is the naturalistic universe, the humanistic universe apart from God. And he chose to do that himself. And if we read from chapter 9, verse 11, Solomon in his wisdom says, I saw again under the sun, that is in the humanistic universe apart from God, that the race is not to the swift, and the battle is not to the warriors, and neither is bread to the wise, nor wealth to the discerning, nor favour to the men of ability, for time and chance overtake them all. Moreover, man does not know his time, like fish caught in a treacherous net, and birds trapped in a snare, so the sons of men are ensnared at an evil time when it suddenly falls upon them. Also this I came to see as wisdom under the sun, and it impressed me. And Solomon is being very sarcastic at this point. Clearly he's not impressed. But I think it's very true that people that we deal with often feel like they're birds trapped in a snare, and that people often know that the race in this life will not be won by those who can run the fastest, by those who have the abilities which seem to count. And I think that we have to say that right from the beginning, that this is the nature of the universe in which we live. And this raises a very big question for us to cope with. And that is the question of, is this a moral universe or not? How can we cope with a universe in which the race is not won by the swiftest? Why is it not true that those who endeavour to do that which is good do not win the prize? That those who try to love their brother do not have a smooth, comfortable life? And those who give generously to those who are poor are not free of illness? These are the questions that we must answer. And looking at, as in fact the writer of Ecclesiastes has done, he has simply pointed out that it's true that none of this kind of morality exists in the world. And we should be the first to admit it, in my opinion. Now, I think it's also worthwhile to explore Job in a little more detail than we've done, because I believe that Job, the book of Job, answers these questions very satisfactorily in many ways. So if we turn to the book of Job, I'm going to plan to do a rather quick look through Job. Now, Job is a book that's very well known, but I think the thrust of Job in general is perhaps not as well known. We have in Job a specific and unique example of the situation as it exists for a Christian, and that is that, firstly, the universe is not only that which exists under the sun. And we are shown in the book of Job that there is, for example, two scenarios going on at once. We have the Lord existing in his heavens and Satan interacting with him, and we have Job and his friends on earth. And it's important, I think, for us to realize that Job does not know what is going on in the heavens, but we do. But the Lord has given us a picture of the total reality that exists. And it's very important that the Christian perspective on suffering begins with this perspective, that the universe consists of both that which is seen and that which is unseen. That reality is greater than that which can be observed as we look out upon it. And as Solomon chose to do. Because without the perspective of the universe as God has made it, both in its seen and unseen realities, then suffering truly is the most horrible and meaningless experience. Because surely it must be clear that if God is the kind of personality he says, that is, that he's righteous and his judgment is without fault, then this universe should truly be a moral universe. That is, that those people who do wrong should be punished, and punished by a God who judges in an impartial way, according to criteria. And therefore, one would expect that if we begin with a God who exists and who has those characteristics, then the final expression of reality should be that morality is seen to occur. And as we see in Job, what we do see is that in the end, that it is a moral universe when we sum both the unseen and the seen together. But the seen by itself is not a moral universe, and that people will suffer when they don't deserve it. Now, this is very clear when Jesus came along to the man who was blind, for instance, and he was asked the clear question, well, who sinned? This guy or his parents? And the answer was neither. The presuppositions on which
the Jewish people at that time had believed was stated to be wrong. That in this situation, the blindness was for another person. And there will be situations in which people suffer in which there is not an evident specific sin involved. And therefore, for them, in this life, there may not be the moral deserts that they will get, because they will suffer on in that sense. They may have other attributes that we talked about this morning. Now, the crux of Job is this, that there is both the seen and the unseen universe, and that there is evil and there is good. And there is a man who has free will, Job, and he may choose. Now, clearly, it is seen that in the situation of Job, Satan certainly was asking questions about Job. Was Job truly a materialist? Was he worshipping that sort of situation which gave him more sheep and goats, a bigger family, a larger house? Or did he truly understand who God was? That was the issue at question. And the issue, of course, was eventually resolved in the book of Job. It's very interesting, in fact, and we'll catch up, to see one of the very interesting threads of Job, which our patients, I believe, have the hardest time with. And that is that Job's friends clearly said to him that you are suffering, Job, therefore you have done wrong. And if you look at Job chapter 4 and verse 7, we have conversation from Eliphaz, who says, "Remember now, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the upright destroyed? According to what I have seen, those who plough iniquity and those who sow trouble harvest it. By the breath of God they perish, and by the blast of his anger they come to an end." And in fact, Job himself faced from his friends this same accusation reworded over and over again. And so our patients do as well in many situations. If you follow through, you can see that in fact Job pointed out that it was not specific sin that was involved in this situation. Not that he was not without sin, but there was not, as far as he could tell, sin which he had not related to God. And the second point that we ought to take from Job is that Job certainly had a perception of God which was truly magnificent. Job realized, I think, without any doubt, that he had a redeemer. And you'll remember those famous words in Job chapter 19. As he implores them to understand and listen to him, as many of our patients who suffer do. And he says, "Oh, that my words were written," in verse 23 of Job 19. "Oh, that they were inscribed in a book, that with an iron stylus and lead, they were engraved in the rock forever. And as for me, I know that my Redeemer lives, and that at the last he will take his stand on the earth. Even after my skin is flayed, yet without flesh I shall see God, whom I myself shall behold, and whom my eyes shall see and not another. My heart faints within me." And in the midst of dreadful suffering, it is clear, I think, that Job understood that, in fact, the universe in which he lived was truly a moral universe, in the sense that justice would be done. And he had a right to refuse to accept the indictments of his friends. And so it is, I think, that in this suffering, there are people whom we look after who should be approached with real sensitivity. When they themselves have brought their own actions and lives before the Lord and have known that they have been forgiven in this sense, and that we should accept their point of view, that in fact they are not deserving of this suffering in many situations. Now, I do not want to minimize the statements in Hebrews, where it says very clearly that the Lord does chastise those whom he loves. And it would obviously be an abrogation of an infinite God not to draw us into line when we, with our finite minds, make mistakes, either by choice or being forced into situations which are overwhelming. And it is, of course, quite characteristic of a loving Father that he will chastise those whom he loves. But I think that it's also very important to see that there are those who do not need chastisement, but who need the sympathy, because in fact their existence extends beyond their natural lives and into the unseen world, and that justice will be done. And I think this is why clearly Paul talks about the different rewards that Christians have, because they will, many of whom will be deprived physically and mentally in this existence, will presumably know the joy of being made complete in the resurrection life, in the unseen life. Now, I will not say a lot more, but I thought that we should go a little further on and look at Hebrews. And if we turn up Hebrews chapter 11, we see again the writer of the Hebrews drawing a tremendous contrast, which we ourselves should see and our patients should be aware of, I would say. Now, Hebrews chapter 11 is known for the annotations of the great men of God. And it is a prescription, if you like, of how faith has transformed individuals, beginning right at the beginning and working through the great heroes of the Old Testament. And I would say to you also that it's very interesting that each one of them is named specifically. And so we go, Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Sarah, etc. But I would draw your attention to the second part of this chapter, which also requires equal or more attention.
If you come down to verse 36, and perhaps a little ahead of that, in the half of the verse of verse 35,
the writer changes step here from the great heroes, the known heroes of this life,
and turns across and said,
and others, the non-specific others.
And others were tortured, not accepting their release in order that they might obtain better resurrection. And others experienced mockings and scourgings, yes, also chains and imprisonments. And they were stoned, and they were sawn in two, and they were tempted, and they were put to death with the sword, and they went about in sheepskins and goatskins. They were destitute, afflicted or ill, and they were ill-treated.
And in parenthesis here, I think something that he felt very deeply.
Men of whom the world was not worthy, wandering in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground. And all these, having gained approval through their faith, did not receive what was promised.
Now, I think the contrast is very clear. That we have that Paul himself, looking at the perspective of both the unseen and the seen world, sees a group of individual people named and great heroes of the faith. And he also sees, presumably, a larger number of unnamed people who carried through in a seen existence the burdens of being afflicted with disease, having torture inflicted upon them, and many other things. And this is part of reality as well, that there are two sides in the groups of people that we
have to treat.
Now, how we address this problem is very difficult, but it seems significant to me to turn, if you turn with me to Revelations chapter 20. And clearly, Revelations deals with the end of things, and if you like, in many ways, the beginning of the unseen for us, that we look forward to existing with the Lord.
And in verse 12 of chapter 20, John says, I saw the dead, the great and the small, standing before the throne. And the books were opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged from the things which were written in the books according to their deeds. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and Hades gave up the dead which were in them. And they were judged, every one of them, according to their deeds. And death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death, the lake of fire. And if anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire.
And I just make the point here that though Paul pointed out in Hebrews that there were a vast group of unnamed people who suffered tragically in the existence under the sun, but none of their names were lost, and that at the end of time, God's moral judgment will include the recognition of their names and also their deeds. So that this is a moral universe, and the questions of why should I suffer are often very difficult to answer. But a Christian must see them across the seen and the unseen, and not just the humanistic framework. And that's why I would say that in the broader text, that as we begin to think about suffering, we have to see it across all of reality, which for us is the seen and the unseen. Because so long as we confine our comments to what happens within the scene, then we find great difficulties, because there are always people who suffer beyond the limits and who seem to have no reason for doing so. But for them, justice will be done. And it would seem to me that a rational person looking at God as he says he is would expect that such justice would be done in the end. And what we would say is that it would be the greatest of justice, administered by an infinite God, whose justice will be truly wonderful to experience, and that his personality will be something to know. And presumably, those people who have suffered physically will also know the joy of having complete bodies that he will give. And I think I should end there, but I think it's a perspective that I personally find very important, and it's one from which we can take the other specific verses and fit them into the pattern to see the total meaning.